there, beautiful people. Welcome to Fantie, the podcast for all those complex and complicado conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am journalist and editor Travell Anderson.
And I am trying to figure out what Travell just conjured up, trying to get his energy ready to get this show started.
It worked, though, didn't it?
If y'all could have seen the chakra workout that you just did to get here.
Yes, honey.
Welcome to Fantie. Coming up on today's show, we are talking about guns and Black folks being armed and whether or not we should be getting guns, our conflicted feelings about guns and the like. Absolutely. But first, in Pass the Popcorn, Derek Chauvin was found guilty, and we're going to talk about it.
Yes, mere hours before this taping, literally like two maybe, a Minnesota jury found former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin guilty on charges of second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter for the May 2020 killing of George Floyd. Jurors announced their final verdict after about 10 hours of deliberation. Sentencing will take place in 8 weeks. And Chauvin will be held without bail until that time. Jarrett?
Yes.
Thoughts? Feelings? So many people were sharing on social media, Black people, kind of the mixed feelings of the moment. Go for it.
I think white people are expecting Black people to be really excited right now. And I just remind them, like, George Floyd is still dead and his family will still never have him again. His daughter will still never have her father again. And I think that if this is a moment to be celebrating, our bar is just way too low. I think that it is great that Derek Chauvin is going to jail. I'm grateful for that. But I'm also... I spent the whole day like working on other stuff. I was up late working last night and it's been a long day. So I'm also like tired from that. But like when the verdict came, I just felt drained. I didn't feel excited. I didn't do cartwheels. I didn't, you know, I wasn't happy because I mean, at the end of the day, a man is still dead. So I don't know. It's been an interesting afternoon as we've, you know, kind of gone through this trial over the last year, through this situation over the last year, and then going through this trial over the last 3 weeks. So that's just kind of where my head is right now.
Yeah.
How about you?
I think that I saw somebody say on Twitter that, like, you know, they actually expected themselves to feel different than how they feel. Mm-hmm. They felt for there to be, they thought there was going to be, you know, if it was a guilty verdict as it is, some sort of joy or elation or a celebration. But in reality, it's just like a numbness that set in after the verdict. And I felt similarly. All I could muster the energy to do was just tweet out a couple GIFs of how I was feeling. But yeah, you know, I think there are plenty of conversations to be had, and I'm sure we will be part of them on this show, just in terms of like what justice actually looks like, what accountability actually looks like, about the broader work that still has to be done. And so I want to take that as granted. But for me, I'm also just thinking about ramifications, like other potential like things that we have to keep. Back in the day, they used to say, keep your head on a swivel, you know, in my streets. And like, I saw a headline today about the case and I clicked on it and I read through it. And so I was reading the story and they talked about how the video and the person who like filmed the video, how it was so central to the case and, you know, deeply important because all of the jurors had seen the video before the case even started. And, you know, it got me thinking about Ramsey Orta, who was the guy who filmed the killing of Eric Garner, and how after the video came out, even though the cops involved in that case, quote unquote, got free or went free, how the police department made Ramsey Orta's life a living hell. You know, by harassing him, eventually he was incarcerated, for things that, like, you know, he should not be in jail for. And so I just think about that individual, and hopefully the community, you know, is able to support in a way that, like, prevents that type of behavior. And, you know, there also is, you know, the other officers who were on the scene and watched George Floyd die, and who've been, for the most part, quiet in this situation, who also will be tried starting later this week. Their trial, excuse me, will start later this week. And so, yeah, I think it's just, there's just more work to be done. This is not necessarily justice. It maybe feels like some sort of accountability. And yet, you know, like you just said, a man will not return to his family, regardless of this case.
I think that you bring up an interesting point about the families. And we've had these conversations over the last few weeks about BLM and Patrice Cullors and the families of the movement, if you will, who've, you know, suffered loss. And we've all learned the names of the person that they lost and have seen them in a hashtag and so forth. And like the impact that it has on these families. And I think there are people who will look at George Floyd's case and say, oh, well, the family got all this money in a settlement. And, you know, Derek Chauvin was found guilty. Like, what else do they want? And it's like, they wanted for none of us to ever know who they were in the first place, right? Mm. Like, George Floyd should still be doing whatever he would be doing today. And we shouldn't ever have known his name. And so I'm also, like, really concerned about the ways that these families are impacted long term. We've heard people talk about experiencing homelessness after having lost a family member because they couldn't. I think it was Samaria Rice, but I don't want to say that it was her. But I've really tried to not read it because it's really difficult to read. But I've heard about it in conversation as well. But like experiencing homelessness because you can't find a job because your name is attached to this case, or, you know, being treat it in the ways that you talked about with Ramsey Orta and things like that. Like, these things have so many ramifications for so many people for so long, right? That I don't think we consider. Like, we think about George Floyd and what happened to him, but we don't think about enough the families and all of that. And I also just want to point out, Nancy Pelosi came out on television and made a statement that I'm sure she thought was beautiful. But she talked about George Floyd having, you know, sacrificed his life for justice and all this other bullshit. And like, I like Nancy Pelosi enough, but like, that really pissed me off, because like the narrative that about him sacrificing his life suggests that like George Floyd made a choice and, you know, decided to give his life for a cause and, you know, went down, you know, in a blaze of glory, if you will. And it's like, no, George Floyd was murdered by someone who took his life and like did not have plans to be a justice warrior or any of this, or be a martyr of any kind. Like, he didn't have choice. He didn't have agency in that decision that his life was taken. And so I just think that, especially white people, I need y'all to be really thoughtful about the way that you talk about this and the way that you engage your black friends about it. And black folks, like, I mean, take care. I saw, you know, some tweets that were saying, like, make sure that you're taking care of yourself and that you are, you know, take a black day if you need to, a black PTO day.
Couple days if you need to. Shit.
Listen. So all of that said, my prayers are with the family of George Floyd and all of those whose names that we've unfortunately had to learn, and all of the people there in Minneapolis and around the country. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to get into the conversation about guns and black folks kind of feeling the need to arm themselves in the midst of everything that's going on in the country. Fanta's coming right back. For most of us, learning a second language in high school or college was not exactly a high point in our academic careers.
I'd just like to share, I learned last night that my mother always wanted to learn French. And how it factors a little into my life story, which we will get to eventually. But it got me thinking, and I was able to say, oh, mama, if you still want to learn French, you should check out Babbel.
Well, there we go. Now, thanks to Babbel, the number one selling language learning app, there's a fun and easy way to learn a new language, even for your mom. Babbel teaches bite-sized language lessons that you'll actually use in the real world. Maybe we can take her to France and see how her French does after she's learned
it. Parlez-vous français?
Okay. Babbel designs their courses with practical, real-world conversations in mind, things you'll get to use in everyday life. Other language learning apps use artificial intelligence for their lesson plans, but Babbel lesson plans were created by over 100 language experts. Plus,
Babbel, real people,
real
honey.
Ones, honey. Plus, Babbel speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. You hear that, Travelle?
Right, mind your business.
Right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months for the price of just 3. Go to Babbel.com and use promo code FANTI. That's BABBEL.com, code FANTI, for an extra 3 months free. Babbel, language for life.
FANTI is also brought to you by the one and only Dipsy, honey. All right. We know the story of boy meets girl, but what about the girl meets girl?
Ooh.
Or the thems meet thems, or the thems meet girl, or them meets boy. How you doing? Okay.
I love the versatility Dipsy, of that. Yes.
Listen, verse life. Hashtag verse
yes.
life. With Dipsy, the stories continue beyond the initial meetup. Come hear what happens behind closed doors. Dipsy is an audio app full of short, sexy stories designed to turn you on. They release new content every week, so there's always more to explore as you are exploring yourself.
Oh.
And if you need to wind down, Dipsy also has wellness sessions, sensual bedtime stories, and soundscapes to help you relax before you drift off. We've told you about them before. We're telling you about them again. For listeners of our show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial. Ooh, child. They're giving you a 30-day free child, okay? an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/fanti, okay? That's a 30 days full of access for free, okay? When you go to dipsystories.com/fanti. dipsystories.com/fanti.
Ooh, one of the newest stories is Fixer Upper 8. Des has a rough day and Henry just wants to make her feel good. He starts a warm shower and gives her exactly what she needs.
Well, what does she need?
Well, I'm guessing something that happened in that shower with that. Never mind.
Well, dipsystories.com/fanti.
Welcome back to Fanti. We've talked about, worried about, joked about, and kind of played around with the idea of the coming race war following 5 years of Donald Trump in politics and about 400 years of white supremacy here in this here country. In a month since March 15th, there have been 45 events classified as mass shootings this year alone. There have been over 147 mass shootings. I say over because this is as of the time of this recording. But surely there's probably been another one since we've recorded this. That also shows that guns are being bought by Black people and women at the highest rates ever. I've had multiple conversations with friends in states across the country about feeling like we need to be taking more seriously the seeming growing need to arm ourselves. But most of those conversations have not been eager or highly motivated discussions about getting guns. Most people I've been talking to, again, anecdotally, have all been reluctant but serious. So we wanted to discuss guns here on the show and our feelings around firearms, or whether or not it's something that we are considering for ourselves. And Travelle, I guess first things first, what is your relationship to firearms, guns, you know, all that kind of stuff?
So I think for the listeners that are familiar with our show, you know that my mother was in the Army for 23 years, most of my life. She's did a couple tours over in Afghanistan, popped over to Iraq for a little bit, Kuwait, you know. So my mother knows her way around a gun.
Honey, she's seen some things. Actually.
I mean, never ask your parent who used to be in the military whether or not they've killed somebody.
Wow. Point taken.
That's just a little bit of advice.
Okay. Okay.
Just don't do it. Because even if you don't get an answer, like my mother never gave me an answer.
That was an answer.
It lets your mind wander.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just like, ah!
And when she says to you, I brought you in this world, and I'll take you out.
Period.
You think she might be serious.
Listen, you'd be like, well, she might have done this before. Like,
I've done it before, and I'll do it again. Now, sit down. I'm going to sit down.
So, like, that's my... So that's that. We didn't have guns in the house. We had other weapons, but we didn't have guns in the house. No one in my immediate family. That's a lie.
We're lying now.
I was about to say no one in my immediate family besides my mother has any experience to my knowledge with guns, and then the lie detector determined that was a lie. immediately.
I hate you so much.
But you know, I'm from the South though, and a lot of my family, extended family at least, like grew up in the country. And so I was trying to think of like whether using guns for hunting purposes were something that I think folks in my family did, and I think so. I remember, you know, folks killing our own squirrels, you know, for dinner. And so I think that's what I have in terms of like my kind of relationship to guns. I'm one of those people personally who's a little bit like, okay, that's cute or whatever, but like cute for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
What about you?
I would say I've had almost the exact opposite experience. Like I can't tell you.
You strapped up, Jerry?
No. I'm saying like I did not grow up with guns in like my in my view, if you will. I've never held a gun. I'm actually really uncomfortable when a gun is in the room. I do know that like some of the men in my family have said that they own XYZ gun and I got XYZ in the house or whatever. I've not seen them and I'm actually really grateful that I haven't because I don't know how I would feel in the house. And guns have always been something that make me really uncomfortable. However, lately I have taken a little bit more interest in the idea of, you know, going to a shooting range and, you know, getting comfortable with shooting a gun. Someone I was talking to about this episode, a friend was saying like, I'm not saying that every black person needs to own a gun, but everybody needs to know how to shoot one. And I was like, okay, that's a perspective. And I don't know that I think it's wrong. But guns have always been something that made me relatively uncomfortable, to say the least. So,
all right. Well, I did want to, before we get into the fan and the anti, I did want to read an email that we actually got, I think, over the weekend from someone related to this conversation about guns, which we had talked even before this email about potentially doing an episode on this, but this email comes from Joshua, who writes, I'm writing in to suggest you do a firearms or self-defense episode. I, like many other people from marginalized communities, felt the need to buy a firearm in the last 4 years. For me, the thought first entered my head in 2017 with Charlottesville and people marching past synagogues chanting, Jews will not replace us. They say they're lucky enough to live in Atlanta and have a local range managed by and frequented by mostly by black people and don't have to deal with the typical right-wing gun nuts. 2020 saw a massive increase in POC, queer, and other traditionally marginalized groups arming themselves. It's changing the face of gun culture in this country, and I don't think it's a coincidence that we are seeing a rash of gun control measures finally get pushed through as marginalized people start arming up. So, little context from Joshua, but for us, let's delve into, go ahead, you want to say something? You got to say something.
I know what Joshua was saying, but something about the phrase traditionally marginalized groups really stung in a way. Not even that it's wrong, but just it tasted kind of gross to hear it, traditionally marginalized. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, that hit different for me.
All right.
I'm okay. I'm okay.
All right. Well, take us into your fan.
Listen, what I'm feeling away today. Y'all gonna have to deal. Listen,
it's okay. We gonna work it's with okay. it. Is we gonna work with it?
Okay. So looking at this from a fan and an anti perspective, I know for myself the fan side of the idea of being armed or strap it up.
Yes.
I do like the idea of feeling more able to protect myself and seemingly those I love. That has never been like high level priority for me though. Like I got to make sure I protect the fort. Like I know that there are plenty of guys who, you know, orient themselves that way, and see themselves and you know, as the king of their castle and all that shit. Which, you know, probably borders on toxically masculine in certain instances, or probably most of them.
Sure.
But, I mean, the idea of being able to take care of one's own is appealing. And then from a data perspective, it's very mixed and murky for me, because it seems smart. Like, yeah, if you're concerned about, you know, gun violence, especially from white folks and white supremacists and or whatever, it seems smart to be armed. But then, like, even the data doesn't even support that, right? Like, the data says, like, the more guns there are, the more gun violence there tends to be, the higher level, a higher rate of, you know, possibility of dying by gunfire and all those different things. But, like, it seems like a safety measure to take to be able to, I don't know, it's a very murky thing for me.
I feel like for me, and I think it's similar for what I hear from you, is like the idea of having guns, even specifically for self-defense purposes, is like real cute. Like the concept is real cute.
Real cute might even be a stretch. Like, it's cute enough, you know? Sure.
It's cute enough. I feel like for me, I the only times that I have toyed with the idea of getting a gun is for like cosmetic and like accessorizing purposes. So like,
come again?
Don't be looking at me like that.
Oh, pink pistol ass bitch. What do you mean?
Yes, a pink pistol, you know, just a pink little what they call them, a 9mm. I don't know what that means.
That's very Madea of you. Like, I just want a cute little pistol to keep in my purse. You're going to put speaking it underneath your Madea turban? Like, what are you going to do here? I don't understand.
I'm just going to tuck it under my right roll, okay? That way it's close to my hand.
Good night. This is a production of Maximum Fun. Wow.
But you mentioned Madea, and I did want to mention, talk about...
If this is about Mabel, I'm going to fight you.
It is about Mabel Simmons. Because, you know, in Diary of Mad Black Woman, the play, there's a scene... Y'all know Madea always shooting up somebody, okay?
Where's this going,
but there's
Jesus?
A scene where they're talking about Madea's gun. And I'm sure you've seen it, or at least heard it. And, you know, Tyler Perry borrows a lyric from, you know, the iconic singer-songwriter Ray J.
Okay.
When she says, what is it? Wow, ta-da, watch out now. Okay. It's the little one, but it's not Bow Wow.
Technically, if I'm not mistaken, that's actually the iconic rapper Lil Kim.
Lil Kim? Oh, is it Lil Kim via Ray J?
I think it's on Sexy Can I. Isn't that right? Sexy Can I? Isn't that... Lil Kim and Ray J, stand by. I'm Googling.
Not stand by. But that for me is another, it was a reference, I should say, that like popped up in the household a lot that allowed guns.
It's wait a minute. Sorry. Wait a minute. Was the other hit that Ray J gave us?
Not the other.
Not you the only other
hit. I hit it.
No, Ray J had some hits. Ray J had some hits. And Wait a Minute was definitely one of them. Loud, tat anyway. Out, watch out now. It's the little what? Yes, no, I live. Sorry, go ahead.
Iconic. But I bring that up just to talk about the ways in which, for me, like, guns were, I don't want to say applauded or, like, commodified? Commodified?
I don't know even if that's right. But
I share that just to kind of, like, detail the ways in which, like, guns in a way, especially through Madea. I told y'all about how much Madea and Tyler Perry factored into my upbringing and household, but how it kind of made fun of guns in a way, which like counteracted, you know, your boys in the hood, you know, style of movies and other kind of like pop culture where guns were seen as a negative, or they were like, you know, criminalized, if you will. But yeah, so that always comes to mind when I think about, you know, the guns.
That was the most Travelle answer about guns, or like reference.
You're welcome.
That was incredibly you, and I love you for it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I she bring it to you every ball, honey.
She,
okay,
she does. She does.
Last thing in the fan I did want to mention, because there is a history of Black folks arming themselves as a means of protection, as a means of self-defense, right? And so whether we're talking about the Black Panthers, you know, shout out again to Judas and the Black Messiah, which is nominated for the Best Picture Oscar this weekend. Or Deacons for Defense, for those who might know that, a little bit of that information. And then, you know, the OG Harriet Tubman, they say Harriet Tubman was glocked up, okay, going back and forth from the north to the south.
Can we not refer to her as glocked up? Like, glocked up? Cynthia Erivo.
I'm trying to give y'all a little levity, honey, okay?
I'm seeing Cynthia Erivo singing. Never mind. I'm not doing that. Okay, so, no, but I think to your point, though, part of what, if we're kind of moving into the anti for me, is that I keep thinking about, like, what if George Floyd had a gun on him? They'd have shot his ass in no time, right? Like, and we've seen that before. Like, think about Philando Castile, who had a gun, told them he had a gun that he legally had, and told them where it was, and that he was not reaching, like, you know what I mean? And they still shot and killed him. And so I think, like, when we think about it from the terms, in the terms of how to protect ourselves, guns aren't going to protect us from the police, right? Like, you could probably couldn't even get your hands underneath your roll to get the gun if, you know what I mean? Like,
you did not have to do that callback out of all of them. You didn't have to do that.
I just wanted to make sure you're paying attention. But like, but you know what I'm saying? Like, guns are not going to protect us with the police. And like, but we also see all of these different stories online, and I'm assuming other people have seen them, but like of white supremacists that are like training themselves, right? And that we especially had a lot of this conversation before the election. And it's like those people that were like training and getting in militias and all kinds of shit like that to be paramilitary and you know, law enforcement. I don't know if paralaw enforcement is a thing, but we'll call it that. That's just as concerning to me, right? Because that hasn't gone anywhere. Those people are still upset about, you know, the election that they think was stolen from them. They are not going to be thrilled about this Derek Chauvin moment. And like, we are still moving in a direction that is not positive, right? Derek Chauvin going to jail changes very little, right? Like, we still live in the same culture that we live in. We still have as many people dead as we have, and we have as many people walking free for, you know, killing Black folks. And so the idea of having a gun in that instance, when if I think it was last week, I talked about being in Starbucks and seeing a police officer and being like, oh, I'm trying to get away from this police officer. If I had a gun, I would be even more worried about having an interaction or making eye contact or avoiding eye contact or looking like I didn't want, you know what I mean? It makes everything more complicated in the same way, in an equal and opposite way that you might feel like you're more safe at home or whatever. So,
well, and that's a byproduct, right, of us being niggas.
Well,
you know, in terms of like growing up in this society where our skin, our genders, a whole bunch of other stuff are already criminalized and politicized, and then you want to add you toting a gun to that as well, no matter, right, if it is registered or not. Okay, no matter if you obtained it legally or not, because more often than not, you not going to get to the point where we can even have a conversation about whether it's registered or not.
Well,
right?
Because how many instances have there been where a person had a cell phone in their hand, you know, a fucking donut, a leaf, whatever it is, right? And like, I was in fear for my life. But then we see these instances where police officers, and I don't know all the details because I've tried to avoid it as well, but like, we've seen the video of the person in the white truck that was, you know, arguing with the police, and the police are like jumping up on the truck, and he has a gun and they're pointing it, and like he drives off and the police officer's on the side of the vehicle, but like that police officer wasn't in fear for his life. Like, what do you mean?
Right.
So
yeah, it's interesting because, right, to your point, and we read a little data related stuff, but like apparently research shows, this is from an article in The Trace from 2020, that defensive gun use is actually rare and ineffective, right? Folks saying that they have every intention of, you know, using a gun for self-defense or to protect themselves. The research actually shows that that's rare and that it's ineffective, right? That for those who do end up defending themselves with a gun, they are more likely to be injured than those who did some other, you know, response outside of guns. And so reading that is also just like, girl, maybe that unsettled feeling that we have is warranted, right? I'm also thinking, somebody gonna be mad at me for this reference, but I'm also thinking about if anybody out there watched Chi-Raq by Spike Lee, mm-hmm. It's all about gun violence, right? And Jennifer Hudson's character like loses her child to gun violence, and there's a kind of scene in there basically in which they're talking about how easy it is to get guns. Mm. And this is obviously in the context of Chicago or Illinois and one of the states around it, but it talks about how so many guns that came into the state were easily obtained by like a surrounding state to where even basically having this kind of patchwork of laws in terms of gun control really ends up being ineffective, mm. right? And why there needs to be more kind of federal action. And I keep asking myself, if it's that easy to get a gun, maybe sis, you don't need it. Like, maybe you shouldn't have it if it is that easy. What's the saying that the old people say? Easy come, easy go. What is it? I know you know what I'm talking about. You sitting over there looking at me like I'm boo boo the fool.
You said, what is the thing that the old folks say? I'm like, it's probably some shit that you say. But like, I mean, easy come, easy go is what people say, but I don't know if that was what you meant, because I what usually is it?
It's,
don't
it's
know.
They use, the context, it's a context of money, and they'd be like, you know, if it come easy, it'll go easy.
Yeah, that
don't
one.
Don't worry about it. Keep going.
I feel like I know what you're talking about, but someone will tweet us. Monique, what is he talking about? So I also think to myself, when we're talking about the anti of this, right? Like, many people have had the... What y'all can't see is Jordan be messaging us during the episode, and sometimes she be showing out. She said, is it Rooster the Booster don't squawk no more? Which is so wrong, and it's so wrong. You know what?
Y'all ain't
needed
right.
This. I needed this. This has picked up my spirits doing the show. But,
y'all ain't right.
But as we are fanti about this, right, there are a lot of Black folks who are apparently very fan about it. Because according to CNN Business, about 4.7 million Americans initiated gun background checks in the last month, a 36% increase from February, according to the FBI. According to this reporting, more than 2 million of those checks were for new gun purchases. They say that the new guns purchased in March make it the second highest month on record for firearm sales. And the threat of looming gun control legislation was a catalyst for
sales.
But they also talk about in another report that the sales spike has been different last year in 2020, right before the election, being driven by first-time gun buyers, especially those among African Americans and women. About 40% of gun sales in the first 4 months of the year were made by first-time buyers, far higher than any annual average in the past. They say that's 24% over the past two decades. Gun sales among Black Americans have been up 58% rent through September, which is, you know, it, they say it's unprecedented. And so it's like, this is a conversation that a lot of Black folks are having right now, either in their households or, you know, within our families and friend groups.
I mean, and there's, I feel like there's reporting after every, like, major mass shooting, and I even hate to say that because they're all like major and should have, you know, our equal attention, but like I'm thinking you know, we talked about in the aftermath of George Floyd's killing and the racial summer of reckoning last year, I'm also thinking about how there were reports around queer people you know, buying up a lot of guns or whatever after the Pulse shooting happened, and every time there's some sort of major moment in which Black folks in particular, but other folks are worried, concerned, responding to the foolishness that we're dealing with, we always see this type of reporting. And so like maybe I'm the only one, maybe we the only ones who still kind of in that middle right. area.
Well, I mean, you know, I one of the challenges for me with the idea of getting a gun is the feeling of contributing to a problem that's continuing to grow. Because like, according to Reuters, there are about 121 firearms in circulation for every 100 residents. The United States is by far the most heavily armed society in the world. And it's like, we know that the more guns there are, the more gun violence there tends to be. And it's kind of like driving a car with really bad gas mileage. You feel like you're polluting. I would feel like I'm, you know, polluting the earth and not helping the environment. You know, I'm a big liberal in that way. But like, if we're looking at guns, it's like, yeah, we already have way too many guns. And the idea of buying another one and putting it in my house and, you know, training on it and all that kind of stuff, it's like, I don't know that that helps the problem. But at the same time, what am I supposed to do? Like, it's a catch-22 situation.
I feel like I might feel differently if I, like, you know, lived out in the country. You know, like, if I lived in, if for all the people who have seen Minari, you will know what I mean. But if I lived in that trailer with the family from Minari, they in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the Ozarks, but see, or like, whatever.
You need it a lot less when you're out there by yourself.
I disagree.
Like,
I disagree.
There's a whole, there's a lot less guns around you when you're out in the woods by yourself or out in a rural area with a less dense population than, you know, a major
but
city.
But there are aminals that you gotta watch out for. There are random people. Have you ever been to a
I can already tell you whatever you about to say.
I'm just saying, you know, the houses, right, that are like on the outskirts of a town or of a city that like you can only go down a dirt driveway to get to. Okay? You know, maybe. If have you seen them yet?
No. I mean, no, I haven't seen it.
I'm trying to come up with some, you know, contemporary references to you know, put you and the listeners into my mind.
See, you did this on purpose because you know I'm not watching them and you know I have no interest in watching them.
I would never do that.
You knew what you were doing.
I do declare.
First of all, that was privileged information, so fuck you, right?
But I don't know what you are talking about.
We are beefing right now because you know I don't want to watch that goddamn show.
You don't have to, my love. We've got other Black trauma that you have to watch.
How dare you ask me that question in public? I should knock this microphone over. But I would piss Jordan off, so I'm going to stop.
Y'all see what I got to deal with? Anyway, I think my point in saying that is I do wonder if...
I'm done. I'm sorry.
I'm saying if we were living outside, like if we were living in different places outside of where we are, like maybe our feelings would be different about, you know, getting strapped up.
I think that's fair.
But maybe not. But that's what I was trying to say based on, you know, my extended simile.
I think the other
simile metaphor.
I think the other thing that is a major question mark, and I'm not sure how to fix it, and I know this is something that was on your list, is like, I don't know what the right answers are about how we deal with folks with mental health issues and guns. And, you know, there was a conversation about blind folks owning guns and things like that. And I'm like, I feel like those kinds of distinctions are a little bit concerning to me because it's like, I'm not comfortable saying, you know, this person can't have this because you know, they're vision impaired, or because they are, you know, they have, you know, schizophrenia or whatever it is. I'm not comfortable with that either, because that begins a slippery slope, right? And like, we know that those kinds of slippery slopes oftentimes usually tend to most negatively impact Black and brown folks, queer folks, disabled folks.
They be very slippy for some folks.
Exactly.
And not for others.
We know that when we start enacting all of those different asterisks, they tend to have a negative impact on Black and brown people and poor people. And as I said, so it's really difficult. And like, I still am not really sure where I stand on this. I've found that there's a Black owned gun range and shop here in LA that I'm kind of interested in going to check out. But like, I've gone to a firing range that had a store and like, you know, a place where you can go and shoot or whatever, because that's what a firing range is. I don't know why I described that, but like I went there, and like, if there were 20 people in the place, it was like me as the Black person. And like, those places also feel very much like places
Confederate.
Thank you. Right. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It feels very,
very Cracker Barrel tea.
It feels very Confederate Cracker Barrel, you know, MAGA 20. And I'm in Inglewood. You know what I mean? And like, and it still makes me feel uncomfortable. And I feel like even that piece of it is like, where do you go to even like try to engage and try to figure out if this is something that's right for you? It's just, I don't think white people ever have to think about these kinds of things of like, where am I going to go get the gun? Where am I going to go learn how to shoot the gun? Because some of the folks in there, I was like, yeah, you look like you in here training for your militia. No shade.
Oh, not training. Jesus.
Listen, I'm just calling it like I see it. But we want to know what you all think about this. So you can hit us up on Twitter as we go to break. Our question for you is, what do you think? Should more Black folks be arming themselves? White people, we don't need you to answer that one. But I am curious if people are feeling like they need to arm themselves more. And you know, how are you dealing with that? Because the data certainly seems to suggest that that folks are. You can tweet or post using the hashtag FantiFam. We'll be jumping in, responding to your posts on Twitter and Instagram from our account at FantiPodcast. Want to know what we missed on our list. Coming up, why y'all hate us so much in listener feedback and our dishonorable mentions. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back.
We are the host of My Brother, My Brother, and Me, and now, nearly 10 years into our podcast, the secret can be revealed. All the clues are in place, and the world's greatest treasure hunt can now begin.
Embedded in each episode of My Brother, My Brother, and Me is a micro clue that will lead you to 14 precious gemstones all around this big, beautiful blue world of ours.
So start combing through the episodes. Let's say starting at episode 101 on.
Yeah, the early episodes are pretty problematic, so there's no clues in those episodes.
No, not at all.
The better ones, the good ones, clues ahoy.
Listen to every episode repeatedly in sequence. Laugh if you must, but mainly get all the great clues. My Brother, My Brother, and Me. It's an advice show, kind of, but a treasure hunt, mainly. Anywhere you find podcasts or treasure maps, My Brother, My Brother, and Me. The hunt is on!
Max Fun Drive 2021 is coming. It'll be May 3rd to May 14th. To get in the spirit, we asked folks like you to let us know what maximum fun and our shows mean to them.
You know, the Maximum Fun Network is really important to me because it is not just a collection of podcasts, but it is a lifestyle and a value system.
The podcasts frequently and deftly float between meaningful and irreverent, in one moment drawing attention to social issues, and in another making dick jokes about Klingons. It shouldn't work, but it does. And I have to believe it's because Max Fun's podcasts are, at their core, thoughtful and kind and human during a time that has often felt cold and isolated.
So keep being great and doing what you do.
Max Fun Drive will be May 3rd to May 14th, 2021, and you won't want to miss it. Brilliant eps, drive exclusive gifts, and maybe some surprises. Want to directly support the hosts of the show we just jumped into? Come back May 3rd for Max Fun Drive.
Welcome back, beautiful people. We're going to get into our listener feedback segment, read out some of your comments and your thoughts. We have an email here from Danielle. This is in response to, I believe it was last week's episode when we were asking Black folks how they're going about, you know, protecting their peace. Danielle says, hey, it's Danielle again, writing about how I protect my peace. The short answer is boundaries. I no longer spend my time, money, energy, or resources investing in things that leave me drained. If a white friend calls asking me to help process their feelings on racism, straight to voicemail. If a family member texts asking for money I know I'll never see again, ignored. If social media wants me to doom scroll until my eyes bleed, girl, bye. Now, I spend my time doing restorative activities like hiking, baking, smoking weed, praise the Lord, and watching Drag Race with my man. As Black Americans, we have to create our own peace because this country wants to take it away.
I mean, I think Danielle knocked it right out the park. I love that smoking weed is a restorative activity. I'm not a weed smoker, but I do enjoy an edible. I'm just not good at smoking. And I will
That's all right. I can teach you if you're interested.
Well, I don't like the whole... I've had multiple people say to me, oh, if you cough, that means you did it right. I'm like, I don't like coughing. So...
Oh, I hate coughing.
Yeah, but like the edibles always tend to treat me quite well.
But if you do the little puff, puff, pass, I think that's less calories.
We have an email from Jennifer that says, I love your podcast. First of all, Danielle, I love your email. Thank you so much for that, because I think it's just incredibly important. Jennifer says in this email, I love your podcast. Thursdays are my favorite podcast day because of your show. Unorthodox and Bianca Del Rio podcasts drop on Thursday. It helps get me through the day. Just a quick comment. As a white person, I can't watch those types of videos. Oh, I believe she's referencing back to the videos of police violence that we talked about. She says, white people should know what is wrong and be upset without having to see the videos, especially so many times. Jarrett, you know you can change the settings on your Apple Watch so you don't get the reminders. Let me know if you need help. Jennifer, I appreciate your, first of all, your perspective on the videos. Second, I appreciate you trying to help, with the Apple Watch. It's funny because I was with a friend on Sunday who was like, I was just listening to your show and I had just gotten an Apple Watch. And now I'm like, should I not have gotten it? And so we had like a whole laugh about that this weekend. I have been working on adjusting my settings, but I also just take it off a lot. I like to wear it when I'm doing any kind of exercise, which is rare, or I will, you know, wear it during the workday so I can see texts and stuff like that. But like, I've already turned off my email notifications and other things. I need to tell it to stop asking me to breathe and to chill out the activity reminders, because I don't need to know that I didn't close any of my rings. I'm well aware of that.
I think you should keep the reminders to breathe, because that could just be a resetting.
Well, here's the thing. I never do it when it tells me to. So it's like, hey, here's the time to breathe. I'm like, shut up. And then I'll keep on going on with what I have to do. So we also have an email from Portia, who I met in the park this week. I had like a couple of people say that they listened to the podcast and went to what I always call Black Yoga in the Park from Walk Good LA. And Portia was like, I heard about this on the show. So an email from Portia.
So Portia says, I appreciate, now y'all know Portia, she would drag us if we, you know, out of line, honey.
Now see, I'd forgotten that, because I probably should have cussed at her when I saw her. What does she have
we
to
love
say?
Portia, yeah, we do. In these streets. Okay, Portia says, Portia's responding to the nigga episode. I appreciate how the episode structure focused on each demographic's relationship with the word nigga. In my bird days,
yes, bird.
Me too, sis, I used to think that no one should say it and would tense up whenever I heard it. Now, my relationship is similar to Delroy Lindo's character in The Good Fight, who has a great profile in GQ that you all should check out. I'm so glad you referenced that in the episode. Portia continues, when doing your research, I'm wondering if you came across Ta-Nehisi Coates' explanation. To paraphrase, he explained that when Black people ask other races to not say it, we're not asking for anything that isn't already established with other derogatory words. If people understand that his wife can call him honey, but other women can't, or how his female friends can call each other bitch, and he can't, they can also understand why Black people can say nigga and other races can't. That includes the non-Black Latinos who only claim... Girl, I just choked on your read, sis. I'm so sorry. Whew, it's hot, though. That includes the non-Black Latinos who only claim Blackness when ducking and diving from accountability. But you already touched on that.
Well, I actually, to your question about Ta-Nehisi Coates, I have heard this, but we definitely didn't say that in the show. So I'm really grateful that you brought that up because, yeah, we have understandings. And when I say we, I really mean y'all have understanding of the things we can and cannot say in certain places. And so it's kind of, a, you know, it's a whole other thing. But yes, Portia, thank you so much for that. That's a really great point. Now it's time for our dishonorable mentions. These are the stories or people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out either for their good or their stupid. Do you want to go first or do you want me?
I'll go first. Keeping on the, you know, I guess political tip a little bit. I want to give a dishonorable mention. I don't know if you saw it, but I think it was yesterday. Today we record on Tuesdays, as you all know. But a couple days ago, I'll put it that way. Al Sharpton posted a video to his Twitter.
I'm gonna stop you there. I do not want to know whatever it is. I get real nervous with Al Sharpton on social media. Love Al Sharpton. Don't love Al Sharpton on social media. It's too much sometimes.
I just wanted to highlight, he posted this video of him walking to get on his private jet or a private jet to go. And his caption was about, you know, going to Minnesota to accompany George Floyd's family. And something felt off about that. I'll put it that way and leave it there. Just go. We don't need to see you getting on the private jet. Like, just go. It felt performative. It felt like
he was stunting.
And
on
maybe this is the social media. This is the social media intern or the person who's over the social media management who's like, oh, this would be great, you know, on the internet, and like they did it. But, like, it just felt very unnecessary.
That's interesting.
And gross.
Okay.
Actually.
All right. And who else? What else you got?
Oh, and then, you know, I wanted to give an honorable mention to the one and only Lynn motherfucking Whitfield.
Yes.
Okay, who folks should remember or, well, one, you might remember her from, you know, stealing the show in A Thin Line Between Love and Hate. Or Madea's family reunion, the movie. But she's also in Greenleaf, or was in Greenleaf, which ran for 5 seasons on the OWN network. I decided a couple days ago to just delve back into the campiness that is Greenleaf. And Lynn Whitfield is like, she's doing what needs to be done. I read earlier that there's a spinoff potentially in the works.
Really?
Of Greenleaf, starring and focusing on Lynn Whitfield's character in her new role, I guess, in the church. And so
I would be here for that.
I'm ready because Lynn Whitfield, she just fucking deserves.
Listen.
And so I just wanted to send some good energy to her.
I want to say, if you're not watching Greenleaf, mind you, they just finished that series in the last couple of months. So
it's all on Netflix, yeah, though.
It is such a good show, especially like, I don't think you had to be in church to love it, but like as a person who grew up in Black church and like in a church that became a mega church and then went to other mega church, like it is so good. So, and like she is perfectly awful on that show and I love it. Like, how far into the show are you?
I've seen the first 2 seasons, okay. But I started back from season 1. So I'm on like episode 6 or 7 in season 1.
Okay. I started watching it because I was like, oh, Oprah's on it. And then, like, she's only in, like, 2 episodes for, like, 8 minutes. But yeah. Then, like, I was so sucked into it, so it was great. Okay, my first honorable mention is going to go to e-host Nina Parker. She's launching her own line of clothing for plus-size women at Macy's next month. You might know Nina from Nightly Pop. She hosts that. She's also one of the major contributors on their red carpet shows that we see throughout award season. After having to create her own dress on the red carpet. She's now got a line of amazing clothes that are going to be available next month. If you don't know Nina Parker, first of all, you're missing out. But she's at Ms. Gossip Girl on Twitter and Instagram, Ms. MZ Gossip Girl. She's gorgeous. She's super talented. She's hilarious. She's got, you know, she's super duper opinionated, which is why she's really great on E. And now she's got this amazing clothing line coming out, and I'm just incredibly excited for and proud of her.
Now, I don't know if I've shared this on the show before, but I love a good fast-ish fashion line, you know, at one of the stores. Y'all know I used to live in the Gabrielle Union collection for New York and Company.
Baby, when I tell you, you were... you should have had a partnership deal with Gabrielle
Union. I sure the fuck should have. But I don't know if I'm going to be able, you know, maybe with my quarantine body, I can, you know, squeeze into something,
well, I don't know,
you know, for the collection.
I don't know what the smallest size is, so I can't speak to that. But it's like she's been getting a lot of coverage.
I'm going to buy something anyway, okay, and get it tailored, honey.
I told her, I was like, I'm going to buy something for somebody and send it. Like, I'm just so excited to see her name.
You can... For me. Do it for me.
Wasn't talking about you. I also want to give an honorable mention. This new documentary on HBO Max is called Persona. If any of you have you ever taken a personality test? Like a personality profile?
Is that the thing to do the INFJ thing?
Sure.
is that what it called? What is
that? Those aren't the right letters, but yes. It's
Briggs and Maya.
It's Myers-Briggs, yeah. The personality test.
See,
have you done that?
Mm-hmm. I've done it before, yes, a couple times before.
You clearly don't remember what your letters are because you threw some new ones
in
there.
You know I don't.
I've taken it a couple of times, and I think personality tests are really interesting, but this documentary dives into how personality tests were created, how the Myers-Briggs was actually created, which is really interesting, but also the ways that they're being used nowadays to, you know, hire people and all of these other ways that they were not intended to be used. So it's called Persona. It's on HBO Max. You know, I love a good documentary, and it's a really good one. So check out that. Finally, I want to give one that is not for the white people. It's an Instagram account called Every Nigga Deserves. It is an Instagram account for like inspiration for black folks. And it'll just be like a real simple message. Every nigga deserves support. Every nigga deserves to win. And like, I can't tell you, I have like a few friends who will like occasionally just like DM me one of them as a message of support or like, you know, uplift or something. And I always appreciate it. So while white people can't have this one, you can have your privilege and your whiteness, and we'll get to have this Instagram account. So,
I mean, I'm sure somebody out there is sharing it to their people too.
Can you imagine?
You better hope the DMs don't leak.
Can you imagine like your white friend sending you like every nigga deserves love? What? No.
What'd you say about my mama?
Exactly. Absolutely not. Melissa or whoever. Sorry, I got really specific. I love you, Melissa. We also want to let you know about, I will say, like, of all the shows that we've done together,
What are you doing?
Let me stop.
You being rude and disrespectful. See, y'all, he is forgetting the best part of the show, which is the part of the show where we recognize black excellence, okay? Black history. Why? Because what? Black history is happening every day. And this week, we are recognizing the one and only Angelica Ross. Now, you may know her as the iconic Candy Ferocity on Pose, which comes back for its final season in a couple weeks.
Don't you want to know the tea there? Because I know something happened.
Or for her role on American Horror Story, which made her the first trans actress with two series regular roles. But outside of acting, she's also founder and CEO of Trans Tech Social Enterprises, which helps support trans folks with job readiness support. I wanted to give her flowers, and I wanted to highlight one particular quote that she gifted us around, you know, the summer of last year. Take a listen.
When I say fuck the police, I mean that shit. And when I say that, what I mean when I say that, because some people are like, oh, well, you know, my cousin or so-and-so, you know, they're a police officer and they're a great person and, you know, what have you. Like, listen, great on them. encourage them to find a new career. And the reason why I say that is because police, the police force, please understand history and to know that the police force was only created once the slaves were freed and they needed to protect white people and white property. For the longest time, white people have not been, they've not been scared of us getting freedom. They've been scared of us wanting revenge.
Have you laughed at it. You haven't seen that clip before, I assume.
I hadn't. I just love when that she starts off so like clear and direct. When I say fuck the police,
I mean that shit.
Exactly.
It's all about the delivery. Well, I think it really is all about the delivery.
I think it's important for folks, because I feel like there are people who aren't really clear on this. Like, y'all need to go see 13th if you haven't seen it. It's on Netflix. It's an incredible documentary about, like, the history of policing in this country and the criminal, quote-unquote, justice system. And I think it's really eye-opening. It was really eye-opening for me when I saw it years ago. And, I mean, I'm with it. So, shout out to her.
Shout out to Angelica Ross. Make sure y'all are, you know, streaming her stuff. Oh, she's at her own YouTube show called The Turning Point that you all should check out. She interviews, you know, various notables and community members.
I think our beloved Char Jocelle has been on that show a couple of times.
I think she works on the show, yes.
Okay, yeah.
Like, as a producer, I believe.
Well, speaking of other shows, we want to let you know that there's a couple of other places where you can hear us. If it's Thursday and you're like, oh no, is the show almost over? We've got a little treat for you. Travell and I did a show that just came out on Tuesday called We Stand Together. Stan, S-T-A-N. It's kind of like half of what Vanti is. Minus the gray area, right? Like, this is like, we live for X. So we did a whole episode. Should we tell them what the episode is about?
Yes, we should tell them, inspired by the Dionne Warwick update that you so eloquently created. Oh. We did a whole episode about our love and inspired by the one and only Dionne Warwick.
I think it's one of our best podcast appearances together. We haven't done like a ton of podcasts together, but like we were hilarious on that show. we killed that. Praise God for edibles.
There is a clip on Instagram from their accounts. I reshared it. I'll probably share it a couple different times.
Same.
Today when you're listening, we'll repost it as well on the Fanti socials, but check it out. It was a really great conversation. And then I also am back on Bullseye, or was back on Bullseye last week, interviewing Nicole Byer from Nailed It. She also is hosting Wipeout. So if you're interested in that conversation, be sure to check out Bullseye for that.
I also want to note what will be yesterday, and it'll be available for rebroadcast. Roman's Bookstore has a live conversation with Richard Louie. You might know Richard Louie from being an anchor over at MSNBC, formerly from CNN. He has a new book out called Enough About Me, The Unexpected Power of Selflessness. I'm going to be doing a chat with him and Roman's Bookstore about the new book. Again, that's happening last night if you're listening to this on Thursday, so it'll be available for you to check it out. But it's about his really incredible life and dealing with his parents' illness and figuring out, you know, his career versus, you know, wanting to give a lot of himself to his parents. So you can check that out again. Richard Louie, it's from Roman's Bookstore. I'll make sure to include the link in the episode notes.
There it is then. And before we go, if you liked a little bit of this conversation, this good that we gave you this week, you should check out
episode 20. Oh, so you get to say this and good? I thought I was going to get to say it.
I'm trying to give you some space, honey.
Don't look at me like that. I hate you. Get us out of here.
Episode 29, okay, vote or don't, but Dude Gotta Go, featuring Mervin Marcano. We had a really great conversation about voting, about what else folks need to be doing beyond voting that we think would be really great to revisit, considering the moment.
Yes, and as we always ask, if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, we ask that you give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Let us know what you think about the show. You can leave anything that's not a 5-star rating as well if you want, but you probably shouldn't. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can tweet at us using the hashtag FantiPodcast, or you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantai Podcast, and we will check them out there. If you want to send us an email to complain about something or tell us how much you love the show, or if you have an idea, you can email us at fantai@maximumfun.org.
And if you are a member of the Maximum Fun family, then you definitely know that the Maximum Fun member drive is on its way. And so if you, you know, wanted to send a little audible message, if you will, an audible kudos to us to feature during those particular episodes that we do around the Max Fun Drive, you can do that by, you can just, you know, call up the little phone, 323-601-8719. Again, that's 323-601-8719, and tell the world how much you love us. Or you can send an email, send a voice memo to membersstories@maximumfun.org.
I'd also like to know why you hate the show. That might be fun. Like,
what?
They're like, this show.
You want to inflict trauma upon yourself.
They're like, this show is utter trash. I can't get enough, but I also hate it. Kind of like me and The Circle.
And I give them $10 a month.
Right, exactly. Kind of like me on and The Circle on Netflix. Like, I hated that show and I could not turn it off.
So I just started watching. I didn't watch the first season, but I just started watching the current season and I'm hooked.
So like, I know that the new season is actually even more interesting because I think they're playing some stunts in the second season. I haven't started it yet, but like, I know that once I start, I'm probably, it's going to be like Pringles. Once you pop, never mind. Our music is by Corrice. Our graphics are by Ashley Wynn and Moonhouse Creative. Our producers are Laura Swisher and Jordan Kelly. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
I bet my neighbors are always like, why is it that Tuesday in the 5 o'clock hour, this nigga's always yelling?